Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 29th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Also, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You'll find that link on the right-hand side of our website also, or you'll find it on the front page, just a little bit way down. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off, last week. We're in the book of Acts, the book of Romans, sorry. Romans chapter 2. And let me see if I can fix this here. Nope, wrong one. There we go. Okay, Romans chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. Therefore, thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest. For wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself. For thou that judgest doest the same things. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things. And thinkest thou this, O man, that judgest them which do such things, and doest the same, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? Or despisest thou the riches of his goodness and forbearance and longsuffering, not knowing that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance? But after thy hardness and impenitent heart, treasurest up unto thyself wrath against the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to every man according to his deeds. To them who by patient continuance in well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life, but unto them that are contentious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish upon every soul of man that doeth evil, of the Jew first and also of the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace to every man that worketh good, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile. For there is no respect of persons with God. For as many as have sinned without law shall also perish without law, and as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these, having not the law, are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. In the day when God shall judge the secrets of men by Jesus Christ, according to my gospel. Behold, thou art called a Jew, and restest in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which hast the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. Thou therefore, which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. For circumcision verily profiteth, if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. Therefore, if the uncircumcision keep the righteousness of the law, shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision? And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, if it fulfill the law, judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision dost transgress the law? For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly. Neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God.
Okay, let's see, hang on a second. All right, Jan, do we have any questions, or do we have any announcements? We'll start with questions, if we have any questions laying around.
We have three or four or five.
Okay. Yep.
John, will you provide sources when you say the American Bar Association was founded while we were still colonies? The prevalent information claims it was established long after, and it would be nice to be able to show people. Thanks.
Yeah, I did see that question coming through the email, and so I was looking into that. I quoted it twice, I know, in Government by Consent, and I probably quoted it also in Court Access and the Common Law. We do know a couple of things, and I didn't put a footnote in there on exactly where. If I recall, I think I saw something on Wikipedia or somewhere when you know, going through history, and I didn't really necessarily think at the time of making a quote per se, because it didn't seem to be anything that really I could be able to quote well. But I do know a couple of things. We know that the Bar Association was well entrenched in the colonies at the time of our founding fathers, even well before, of course, they were got to the point where they were deciding to write the Declaration of Independence and leave the British. And that, of course, is around 1775, 1776. But I do recall very specifically reading in some research in 1750. I can't find that. I was looking around. One of the strange things, and I've heard of this problem before, and it has gotten pretty bad, and this kind of, I found it, when I went into Google to search out, you know, the history of the bar, the British bar, I mean, all they wanted to do is take me to the British pub. I mean, it was ridiculous. And no matter how deep I went into the potential answers, I went down 10, 20 pages, whatever it was, couldn't find any. Again, nothing concerning the British bar. So I haven't been able to find anything else on the Internet for it, you know, in my research. I did originally see it, and I did make a note, and I did quote that. But I don't think there's a problem in thinking that 1750 is too early. By no means. We do know that Benjamin Franklin, that in 1740s, he had already had his newspaper up and going, and he was making a lot of havoc and problems with the king, and they weren't too happy. And there was no doubt at some point in time after, you know, that particular problem, and others, of course, you know, was agreeing with Franklin. That's quite early on. That was in 1740s. So the bar sounds about right, that it probably would have been about 1750. I hold up to that. I know I've read that. I know I've made notes of that, and I did quote it in the book. But even being wrong, even if it was a few years later, it definitely had to have been well before 1775 and 1776, because there were problems in the courts already trying to get convictions. And that is exactly why, you know, the British Crown used, of course, the people here that were in control of the government to take people across the sea in order to try them. So that's the best I can tell you. And I'm sorry I don't have an actual quote on that, but I do hold to that. And even if we're off a few years, I don't think it makes a big deal. They've been looking to destroy our judicial system in the colonies, and even more so, of course, after we became the United States of America. And that never stopped, and it's a history of destruction, a history of assault upon our judicial system, which also became a history of assault very early on, against our political system, even before we became the United States of America. So as a matter of fact, the Federalist movement was really driven by people who are anti-Federalist. They were very destructive, and this is what caused the two parties, was the anti-Federalist, and tried to pin down the opposite side, particularly, for instance, Jefferson, calling him a Republican, and as if it was some kind of a party. As a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson makes some quotes on that concerning the fact that he's not a Republican in the sense of a party, and all of our founding fathers said that the parties were a problem and would be destructive to our nation, and yet that kind of stuck, and as time went on, that two-party system has been nothing but destructive, and the Bar Association has used those two-party systems in order to destroy our nation, and we see how they got their fingers into our legislative system and control that as early even well before 1871, the Organic Act of 1871, which was really the place of foundation that all of what we see today and all of the problems today have been constructed upon that. But we can see even earlier on the assault upon our legislators and trying to get the bank in, taking control of our banks, our legislators, in order to maintain the bank. And the bank, even though rejected, did, of course, get its foothold in America quite early on. And it was Jackson that killed the bank, and then, of course, it resurrected again. And here we are, hopefully, at an end of the bank again. And I should hope, if we, the people, get educated well enough, we will prevent that from ever happening again. But I can say, and I do believe, that if we, the people, do not take control of our government by having government by consent through education and activity on the grassroots level, that we're only going to end back up to the same thing again over time. When you forget history, you're going to repeat it. And so we need to get active on this. All right, next question, Jan.
I ran across some statements that may be true as far as what is the grand jury to proceed with, and I would like to have this verified by NLA. The first statement is, 3 jurors minimum are required to order the removal of a case out of an inferior administrative court to be heard or tried or decided in a high court of superior jurisdiction.
Yeah, I don't really repeat that again. I'm not sure I understand that. 3 jurors, so 3 individuals.
3 jurors minimum are required to order the removal of a case out of an inferior administrative court to be tried or heard or decided in a high court of superior jurisdiction.
Well, again, if it's a court, if it's a jury court that's going on, then that is the highest court. There is no higher court than the jury court. 12 individuals making the decision, the peers of an individual. So I've never heard of anything like that. To me, it doesn't really make any sense. And again, there is no higher court. We are a court of law. We're a people of law, and we have an unalienable right to have a court of law. Should we have a need for it, or if we're accused of something, we would want to be in a court of law, and that is a court of justice. And there is only one court of law, there is only one court of justice, and of course those two things are synonymous, they're one and the same. And that is a court with an untainted jury of 12 of our peers making the decision on that case, and that's it. If an individual, and this has been a problem that has plagued many of us, and a lot of us haven't known what to do in order to deal with this problem, I know I've come to a solution and a conclusion of this problem, and I've already exercised it once, and it was in a traffic court, but other than that, I will be exercising this point in a couple of other cases that I've already got going, at least 3 other cases. And that is when they try to hijack me into a civil law court. And I've got three cases in a civil law court right now. And it's been somewhat frustrating trying to get that control back and move it back to a court of law. We'll move it into a court of law, which would be a court of record. And that's going to be a little bit what we're going to look at tonight, because and I'm not going to get too deep into it unless people have some questions, but the writ coelanto, in my opinion, is that key. And we've executed that early on when we first filed our case against the federal judiciary. But in filing that case against the federal judiciary, I don't know that we didn't really understand how to really push that forward. At least I didn't. And it sort of sat there and we kind of dropped the ball. But on the other hand, maybe it was good that it happened that way, because now we're at a point where there's a lot more potential of us winning in the courts. A lot of stress and pressure at this point in time will be on the courts, especially as things start to unwind for them, so to speak, in the coming month or two. To push that coelanto, I've also learned and I found some information. I don't know that I had this in my original coelanto that I had written, nor in the one that's in my book. I'll have to go see exactly. I think I added a couple of things, and one of the things I might have added, well, maybe it has been in there and I just didn't realize it, and that was a quote of a code that requires the obedience and the execution of that coelanto, ultimately, which is a demand for their oath, their financials, and their bond. And if they fail to provide that within 10 days, then you can push it up to the appeal, and they have to, enforce that code. And that's what we would be pushed up the line, as you go up the appellate process. If you're in a court and that kind of a problem exists, and you realize, well, hey, I'm not in a court of record, so you serve a writ coelanto. Everything stops at that point. The court case does not go any further, for it cannot, because it's a problem. Because the challenge ultimately is jurisdiction. That would be the cause for serving that writ coelanto. And it's a matter of holding on to that and pushing it up the line to the next, like I said, their boss, which would be the appellate court upward. I mean, you could eventually get up to the United States Supreme Court. But every individual that would come in and violate that and say, well, send it back to that court and not enforce that writ coelanto, then they would deserve a writ coelanto too. So again, something like that, every time you walk into a court, I know I do this, and I'm going to be doing this from this point forward. Whenever I walk into a court and I know that I already know what they're going to do, I will always have a writ coelanto already written up, ready to go in my back pocket, and put the pressure on that court to start be obedient onto the law. So, anyway, but we're going to talk a little bit about that, and I want to show some forms that I did upload onto our website about that. All right, next question.
Well, the second question was about the 12 jurors, so you've answered that. So I'll go to the third question. And that is, 23 jurors are required to hear a presentment of evidence by law enforcement seeking to acquire a true bill indictment to bring a charge or charges against one of the people.
Read that again. I'm not sure I caught the question.
23 jurors are required to hear a presentment of evidence by law enforcement seeking to acquire a true bill indictment to bring a charge or charges against one of the people.
All right. Well, first of all, it is a good point that it needs to be done by a law enforcer. And there is only one law enforcer, and that's a sheriff. And, of course, a deputy is with the sheriff, deputies or people, individuals who are working for the sheriff's department, which we may call a bailiff, which their duties may be in the court. But whether they have the proper patch on or not, as long as they're working for the sheriff and they're knowledgeable of the law of the land, which very few are, of course, which they would apply that, they're the ones that can take that. The bailiff, not necessarily, of course, but they, of course, maybe so. I have to think about that. As long as working for the for the sheriff's office. They're the ones that have to go to the grand jury to ask for an indictment. So they have to be convinced that there was a law being broken, and they need to, and that individual is potentially guilty of that law being broken. And they have the duty to bring that before a grand jury and to see if they would agree with them. And it would be 25, not 23. I know there's all kinds of numbers up there. I think the highest I've heard on the civil law side is 24, I believe. But 25 is the key. And we get that from the Magna Carta. Now, prosecutors, attorney generals, they have no power, no authority to go before a grand jury, none whatsoever. They don't belong going before a grand jury. If they have a case, they need to bring that case to the sheriff, and it's the sheriff's duty to make sure that case is brought before the grand jury if he sees fit that it should be, if he sees that there's an evidence. You know, that's one of the biggest problems we have is bar attorneys who are prosecutors and attorney generals, and they go after people unrighteously, unjustly, and a lot of people are convicted in their civil law courts when they should not have been convicted, and they never should have been indicted. And that's why we have to have a knowledgeable sheriff, and we need to bring that back into the system, that only the sheriff can go before, and the coroner. The coroner can also bring a case before the grand jury. So those are the only two individuals that should be. And again, I know I mentioned this last week and maybe even the week before, if the sheriff was doing his job down there in Florida, that warrant never would have been served because the sheriff would have seen that it was a faulty warrant and he would have cast them out. And if they said, well, hey, even if the warrant on its face was faulty, on its face just was totally faulty. But if, even let's say it wasn't faulty, but if they have a affidavit, because it must be brought with us, you know, with an affidavit, and so you have to have a signed warrant by a judge with an affidavit attached showing the reasons and why a warrant should be executed. And without that, it can't go forward. And if the sheriff was unable to see that, then he should tell him, you know, get out of town. You know, we're not going to allow this enforcement on this warrant. We have to know that it is lawful. So again, this is the problem we have. We have the Bar Association, and this feeds right into what we were just talking about. The Bar Association has seized control of our courts. They've taken us from courts of law into civil law courts. They have seized control of our jury system. They stack the jury, and all you have to do, just, you know, in general, just go read the federal booklet that they hand out to jurors, and you can see all of the problems within it. And the fact that a judge often will start the case off with a jury. Remember, you guys get to decide the facts, but I get to decide the law. And that's a fix. The fix is in, you know, because people may break the law that is no law at all. And the jury needs to have that ability to be able to nullify that and say, hey, that is no law at all. I agree. Hey, it shouldn't be applied against this individual or whatever the case may be. But anyway, I guess that's about all I have to say about that. All right, next question.
I don't know if anyone from NLA or the listening audience is familiar with Executive Order Number 14067. Which was signed by Joe Biden on March 9, 2022, which is proposed to move the United States into a social credit score system and transitioning into a digital money system. I know the discussion of digital money is nothing new to NLA or most of its listeners, but if this talk does become reality, what recourse do we have to curtail this stonewalling control mechanism? The last time I checked, the Constitution for the United States only tolerates gold and silver for lawful tender and transaction. And then he gives a link for an interview with General Flynn, which discussed this matter.
Well, the answer is also in the question. You know, again, it goes back to the Constitution. What is lawful money? And you go right. And the Constitution is very clear on that. So the system we have set up is not a lawful system. You know, it's backed by absolutely nothing. You know, those bitcoins, I know a lot of people get into those bitcoins, and I can assure you that that is not real money. It's backed by the same thing that the Federal Reserve note is backed by, and that is nothing. And nothing will get nothing. I think that whole thing, I really truly believe this, that that whole thing was a Ponzi scheme. The early in, they were able to push that in. I mean, that Bitcoin has gone so far in its value, and people have been able to really reap great profits that have gotten in early. But the people on the end, they're the one that's carrying the worthless coin in this case, because, again, it's backed by nothing. There is absolutely nothing. And, you know, if we were to have a serious EMP, a sun flare, okay, which is an EMP, an electrical magnetic pulse, if we would have a serious one, and we are due for one, that could wipe out a lot of things. I don't know if we do know that the electrical grid in the United States is protected, and I just found out about that, you know, just some months back, maybe 6 months ago or so. So the electrical grid is very much protected. We know our satellite systems are protected too. But what we don't know is protected, for instance, is your cable system or your phone lines. You know, they have some electrical powers that run through that to make that work, and they can all fry up. And your house is not protected, so if you are not protected from an EMP burst, you're going to have a problem. But if the whole system got burned out, Bitcoin is gone, because it relies on the internet to some degree. It relies on, because it's nothing real. It's just the technical recording in various places, however they work that out. But anyway, it's in jeopardy. But whether anything like that happened with Bitcoin or not, eventually it's just going to fall on its face. It's going to flop. It has no, it's backed by nothing. And history has shown that everything in any time, going all the way back even to, 2,000 years ago, any money system that was not backed by something of value has always failed. It never made its way through and won success in any way. So, all right, next question.
That's all, John.
Okay, any announcements?
Nope, no announcements tonight.
Okay. All right, I got something I'm just going to share quickly. Let's see. Anybody that wants to follow up and get a copy of this, you go to education starts here. Highlight that. If you're looking at your at your computer, I'm sharing this on my desktop. Anybody that's on a smartphone or coming in through with a browser or anything other than just a phone won't be able to see this on a phone, unless you have an app on your smartphone. When we do have access to an app, for those who may not know that, you can find it under our weekly call. But anyway, education starts here. Come down to the law, okay? And after you highlight the law, you come down to court forms and process. And that's the page I'm on right now, court forms and process and instructions. This page here has information, for instance, a lot of different forms that you can have, instructions and forms challenging jurisdiction, how to move your, and forms to move your case for cause, how to file and filing a habeas corpus, moving court for enforcement, notice and demand, and then a lot of downloads, information that could be used, of course. We have quite a few, dictionaries here, and memorandums. But anyway, I posted up here at the top just over this weekend. I put in, someone asked about land patents last week, okay, and I don't have much knowledge. I don't have any knowledge on it. I started reading this. It looks pretty good. Gerard's been reading this, and he's going to, I don't know, maybe he can comment on this tonight. I don't know how much he's read, if he read anything yet, but I had just spoken to him over the weekend on this. But maybe next week, if he gets through this, maybe he can comment on that. If I have time to read through it, it's quite a few pages. Let me see if I recall. I think it was 180 pages. Yeah, 180 pages, what you need to know about land patents. Now, I'm not sure how I got this. Maybe someone shared it with me. I don't remember. But there is instructions on how to get this going, and that's found I don't know if this is chapter 21. I guess it is chapter 21, page 114, steps to your land patent. So they do show the process, and they give you a lot of information concerning things before that. But I will say that I have not gone through this where I can comfortably say that this is how things work. And so again. But it's up here for people to read and take a look at, and hopefully we'll be able to comment more on this next week. So just want to let that be known, because that question did come up last week. Now, on this, we also have a copy of the Corwanto, and we have this in PDF, and I have it in Word, DocX. So Word, of course, is nice to have, because you can, you know, manipulate it a lot easier than you can a PDF. And when you cut and paste, of course, and move it into your own mix and changes, all of the footnotes follow along. You know, if you copy out of a PDF, the footnotes don't come along with it. So you have to go back and cut and paste each one of those footnotes individually to place it in place. But anyway, this Corwanto is pretty close. And I should have looked before. If I had time today, I guess I could have done that. But I'll look at this before next weekend to see how much, or next Monday, how much I've added to this. But I don't think I've added much at all, maybe a couple sentences at most in the Corwanto. But what I did add, I added four pages, and I called that a supporting memorandum of law. So this is a writ Corwanto and a supporting memorandum of law. And the total of that, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And the total of that was... six pages, I think. Yeah, six pages. It used to be two. And again, I don't remember. I know I added, I think I added these, you know, footnotes, so to speak, you know, these authorities. I think I recently added that, but I have to go back and look. But I don't think I added much to this. You know, they are compelled to answer under 28 U.S.C. subsection 1361. And this applies to them. This is a U.S. code written by Congress, U.S.C. 28, and it's subsection 1361. And they're compelled to answer. And you take that up the line, the courts, to require them to answer. This is how you'll take control of your case, okay? And you could do this in a traffic court and take it up the line and require it to be answered. Believe me, at some point they're just going to throw your case out, because they're going to want to deal with this. And it's up to you if you're going to allow them to do that. But anyway, I don't recall whether I had that in the original, but in any event, this is the updated one, the most updated. And, you know, as you live and you learn, and you learn more things and find correction from time to time. Now, the memorandum of law, the purpose of this memorandum of law is to remind the judge and all officers of the court and all public officials of their obligations to faithfully perform their duties under oath with integrity by upholding the law of the land, also known as the common law or natural law, whereas their mandatory bonds guarantee against the public officials fraud or dishonesty and covers loss arising from neglect or omissions. Now, I don't think I'm going to read much of this. Maybe I'll read a little bit. A public official's bond refers to an instrument by which the public officer and a secondary obligor undertake to pay up to a fixed amount of money if the officer does not faithfully discharge the duties of his or her office. A statutory public official's bond is thus a public official's bond, mandatory by statute. Black Law's Dictionary defines an official bond as a bond given by a public officer conditioned on the faithful performance of the duties of the office. In the three-party surety structure, the public official is the principal, the bonding company is the surety, it's sometimes called the second obligor, and the government, or in many cases the public being served by the official, is the obligee. All right, I'm not going to read any more of this, but people can read this, they can download this, they could use it, and this, again, is the paper that I would have in my back pocket filled out properly for the court case I'm in with the judge and the case number, and in this case, it would be you as the petitioner against the judge and the prosecutor or the lawyer, which were the respondents, okay? And this is how I do think this is going to give us some steam and some leverage and clout to push our cases through the court. But you have to follow through. We give them 10 days. That's what's required. Maybe I'll just read this front page, you know. One and for the record, this good faith presentment pursuant to the First and the Ninth Amendment petition for redress of grievances is presented by said petitioner to the said respondents named above, located at the above said court for the purpose of obtaining full disclosure, identification under determining under what authority, venue of office, and capacity the recipient appears to conduct public business in approaching the presenter. This administrative notice, supported by memorandum of law attached, duly served on you and deemed actual, constructive, and sufficient notice, requires that you provide to the presenter within 10 business days from the time of presentment copies. And bear in mind, it's 10 business days, so you don't count the weekends. The time of presentment, copies of the below listed documents, said copies to be certified under penalty of perjury and exemplified in accordance with 1 Stat 122 and 2 Stat 298 and Federal Rules Civil Procedure Rule 902 under Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States for the United States of America. And, of course, what we're looking for is particularly, well, actually in some cases more than just the three items, but we have the oath of office, the official surety bond, letter of appointment from if applicable, a registration statement, delegation of authority affidavit, loyalty and security clearance, employee affidavit if applicable, economic statement of interest. You are compelled to answer under 28 U.S.C. 1361. Your failure, refusal, and or neglect to fully and timely comply will set for the record as ultimate fact that you have failed to qualify for the office and therefore the acting without lawful authority, office, and or capacity as an officer, official, or agent of any original jurisdiction, non-corporate, governmental, state, or federal agency. It is presumed and or assumed that it is your sworn affirmed duty and fiduciary obligation to provide the above information in a timely and truthful manner. Please be aware of what the federal courts have held in U.S. versus Tweel. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. This administrative notice and demand is not intended to hinder, delay, obstruct, intimidate, or in any way threaten anyone, but is simply a means of invoking recipient's duty to act pursuant to the above-quoted statutes which apply to the recipient and the recipient's official capacity. For lawful disclosure of virtually needed information, this demand is made consistent with the United States Supreme Court decision, Federal Core Insurance Corporation versus Merrill, and the inherent and mandatory duty of honest services by a public servant of the people. Should recipient not timely and fully comply to 10 days, it will be deemed by a tacit proclamation your implied admission that you have failed to qualify for your office or employment pursuant to the principles of law embodied in the decision of Norton versus Lewis. Wherefore, the aforesaid judicial officer is to place in the record of this court and mail the same to the plaintiff the aforesaid demand. And then respectfully submitted your name and your seal. If you don't have a seal, the word seal is sufficient in law, but people should have their own seal. They should consider doing that. And then, of course, that memorandum is attached to this, which is another four pages. It gets into five canons that a judge must follow, and the professional conduct requirements of lawyers. That is the big thing that I added, is those four pages, because it supports a lot of information that supports this particular, writ that we're laying out here, which is the writ quo warranto. So anyway, people can download this and use that in their court. And you can use it again. I plan on using it if I have to go back to traffic court again. I plan on having a copy of this in my back pocket because I'm not coming back no more, and I'm going to let it be known in the court. I already filed my papers. You removed my papers. That's a crime. It's 2 years in jail. And if a judge was behind that, it's 20 years for the judge. I mean, that's the law. And I'll make sure that I have those codes. I don't know them offhand at the moment, but you're going to want to quote those codes. So that should put the judge on notice right away, okay? And the fact that you do not intend on coming back, that you expect that this court be discharged immediately. And that, of course, is presuming that you have given a really good paper laying out the fact and that this is jurisdiction is, you know, they don't have personam jurisdiction. They have subject matter jurisdiction, remember that. But they do not have personam jurisdiction, and that's the key. And then that's when, if the court refuses to, discharge the case, that's when I'd file the, serve the court warrant on the court right there and then. And potentially pursue the crime that took place. Because I know in my town, when I've gotten some tickets and I've gone in, they have sent my papers back. So I sent my papers in, and they removed them from the file and sent them back to me, so the judge never sees it. I make sure I have a copy of that too, in case that happens. Or maybe they just can't find it. Or the judge says, well, I don't seem to have a copy of that paper. Well, here, here's a copy. But anyway, it could be used. Now, I also did a notice and demand for the oath and bond, which is the very same thing, but this is in a case that you're not in a courtroom. Let me open that up. Again, I got it in PDF and in Word. You have a problem with someone and a clerk or something, particularly one who has taken an oath. Anybody who is an oath taker, clerks are oath takers. The clerk that has been elected. So wording had to be changed a little bit because we're not going into a court. The canons for the judge is not in here, so it's a little shorter. This is 4 pages. And it's set up in a notice and demand for identification and credentials. Okay, and again, they have to respond to this, and if they don't respond to it, you can then move this into the administrative process, and eventually, you're probably not going to get anywhere there, but you go in there, and then you push it into the Supreme Court or the County Court, and that should be a court of record, of course, at that point. And the reason I say potentially moving it into the administrative process, because I think you could, you don't have to do that because, if you're going against an individual that is working for the government like a clerk, because unless you want to pay the fee to get into the court, you can go directly into the Supreme Court or the County Court and then move it up the line and again use those quo warrantos in order to force them to obey the law and honor their oaths. Anyway, I guess that's it for that. Let me see if there's anything else we put up here. Notice and demand, the land patent. Okay, that's pretty much it on that. So again, this is available for download, and people can use it. And I think it's pretty powerful. It's been around for quite some time. We learned about this from Bill Thornton. Anybody who's taken the civics course, they would have heard the Bill Thornton tapes. And Bill Thornton has one major flaw, and I should probably put a note in the course itself, so I'm going to think about doing that. But his major flaw thinks that he's the king. Although we are a king of our own little world, our own home and so on, but the true king is God himself, and he has a bench. It's called the king's bench, and that's called the jury. And so that's the real king of the court, which is God, and the jurors are the king's bench, so they're supposed to reflect his will, which is justice and righteousness, with the power and the authority to nullify any law brought into that courtroom. All right, I guess that's it for that. I guess we'll move on to taking our questions. Hold on a minute. Okay, let me see. I guess we'll go into Q&A. All right, first person we're going to take is Felicia from Florida. You got the mic, Felicia. Go right ahead.
Hey, I'm looking at the surety bonds on the website, so I'm going to look through that. But I have a couple of quick questions because I don't want to hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out how to actually go about putting my case into the Florida federal court.
Uh-huh.
Because I really don't understand the joiner.
Okay.
Because nothing has really been done with the joiner, and it's been almost 5 years, so Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how I can go about filing that.
Well, we're going to be doing the, we're preparing to do quo wantos right now for all of our joiners. Okay, so we'll be making contact with you. I mean, if you want to do it yourself, you know, we have plenty of information up on our website on we just went through the quo wanto. That's what's going to be served, the requiring of their bonds, and that'll be the beginning of people getting justice and some restitution, and to some degree completely restored possibly. I still don't know the limitations of the amount of monies that could be gotten out of this. I thought it was about $250,000. For some reason, that's what I had heard, but someone mentioned it could be millions, and I can't deny that. I don't know either way. But now that I've finished this paperwork, I will be making contact with an individual that has been sharing some of this information with me, and so they have more knowledge of this than I do, and I'll be talking to them about the limitations, the amounts. So if it is millions, then someone who has lost a home that's worth over $250,000 or $500,000, whatever it is, well, then they can get restored of that home. So we intend on following through with that. At the same time, of course, the joinders will be applied within our court case. But I'll make note of this again, and we will be notifying everyone. We have about 300 joinders, roughly speaking. I don't have an exact count, but I'm pretty sure 300 is a very close number, and a lot of those people have not been responding to some of the things that we've been sending out. They haven't been responding to their requirements that they agreed to do, and so we'll be making personal contact with those people, and if they don't get involved in their case with us, we're not going to pursue the quo wanto. We're not going to file a quo wanto on their behalf, because we're stuck with no access to the individual, and we're not going to go down to the court to deal with this. They'd have to be present for this at some point in time. But again, you know, we can write all the papers. They don't, but it has to be, and they have to, you know, actually file it because it's their case. But we will be there to back them up, of course, and, you know, as the jury, ultimately the grand jury's job is to do that. And we're coming in from the perspective of the grand jury. I haven't thought about how we're going to write this up yet. I mean, we know how we're going to write the quo wanto, but how we're going to introduce us, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, assisting the individual, whoever that may be, you in this case, in your case. But it's going to take probably a month or two. I don't know. We're working all the paperwork out right now. We have a lot of papers to work out, and we have a lot of people to contact. We're going to contact everybody by phone once. I mean, we may make a couple of calls, leave a couple of messages at some point, then it'll just be email. And if people don't respond, then we're not going to be pursuing a quo wanto for them.
Yeah, but you told me 2 weeks ago that you was going to call me, and I was waiting, so I never got a call. From the Monday night call.
Yeah,
I'm
but...
sure.
Yeah, but on the quo wanto?
No, on the Monday night call 2 weeks ago, you said that you was going to give me a call in a couple of days. And
okay, yeah, but what was it about? I don't recall particularly. What was it about, why I would have called you?
The paperwork that I've already submitted for the past 4 years.
Oh, well, okay, maybe I misunderstood you, or maybe you misunderstood me, but I can't do anything until we pull everything together, and I can't deal. We're going to have some meetings where people, you know, you and anybody else that has a case, will come to those meetings to be able to deal with the questions and explaining things in a more detailed fashion. And, of course, that'll be open to anyone who wants to come. But basically, well, maybe not, because we're going to take attendance. We need to know who's responding and who's interested in their case, because we will be as interested in their case as they are. And if people aren't responding and aren't doing what they need to do because they agreed to get educated and they agreed to certain things, and if they haven't, then they agreed to respond. And if they're not responding, they're not getting educated, they're not keeping the agreement, they're not coming to the meeting, we can't do nothing for them. We will take this as a joinder into the court anyway. All these cases will be joined onto our case as we go into the court, primarily as evidence, okay, because it proves a conspiracy, because each one of the, like, non-judicial foreclosures are done the same way by every judge, no matter what state and county you're in. It's It's the same way over and over again. Same thing with the habeas corpuses, the refusal to give the people their right to due process through a habeas corpus, and any other different cases. You know, we have ABS cases and CPS cases and denied, and there were like habeas corpuses also. So all those cases are evidence of the way that they've been acting, proof that they have been subverters. But we will push those cases. As those cases are pushed forward, that pushes those cases open. Now, if the people have been, restored through the bond and got, that restitution, then there's nothing more to pursue, because then that'll be settled, and that's that. But if that's not settled, then of course they will be able to use the case that we have at some point in time to reactivate their case and get justice. And we will address what the requirement and decision we're looking for in a wherefore clause from this court as we go through the process. And we will push it all the way up through into a court, ultimately a court of justice, which is a court of record. But if necessary, right up to the United States Supreme Court, if we can get a proper ruling from them. But I trust the people more than I trust the United States Supreme Court. So that'll be really really what we'd be focusing in on. But but you will be contacted soon, and soon doesn't mean weeks. It's going to be at least a month, maybe two. It's up to, there are people working on all the paperwork. There's a lot of paperwork to be worked on. There's a lot of phone calls. You've got 300 phone calls to be made, and then followed up by emails, and then getting a meeting. And then that's when activity really will start to move at that point, when we get to that meeting. Because at that point, all the paperwork would be done, everything would be ready for filing, and everybody would have been contacted, and we'd see who was responding. And people will have that opportunity to reconnect themselves with the education that they promised to get, because a lot of people have not gone through with their education. And it's extremely important that the people become educated, and we're going to push this every way we can to force that upon the people who we are doing something for. I mean, we didn't ask for any big monies. It cost many thousands of dollars to have lawyers to do the work that we're doing.
I've sent things, and it's not posted on the website that I've sent them. So
what's
my
posted?
Money. I've sent money, and I've sent other stuff. So, but it's not posted. Yeah. But I don't want to hold anybody up. I have a statement.
But you're talking about the papers aren't posted. Your case.
No. I'm talking about giving to NLA. I've sent money over and
no,
other
I know that. No, we already know that. We know you, and we've asked for $100 donation or more, and people pretty much to come up with $100 donation. There's some people who've given more occasionally, but basically that's what we asked for, to go through the process and do the paperwork and get it all together. And that supports NLA as much as helping to support whatever cost we have in that process. In the beginning, we were serving all the papers on our own, serving, and there'd be three or four different processes as we went through. We'd have to put the papers in three or four times, first the paper that we filed and the default and so on. And of course, things have changed from the beginning, because in the beginning, it was only a one paper filing, but we created a three or four paper filing. And then eventually we pushed that over to the people that were coming in to, we'd prepare the paperwork and everything and then get it to them, and they have to serve it. And that helped us a lot by pushing it that way. And it helps to educate the person and see how the process works also. It also gets them more involved. We don't make note of what people give us on the website. But again, I'm aware of you, so we know you for a while.
Okay. Now I have a statement, and then I'm gonna have a question. Now sure. I heard you talk about the EMPs and the solar flares. Mm-hmm. Then we have asteroids coming. I was here in Florida. I told them it was gonna be a no-go for this so-called mission to the moon, which we're already there. We never left. But I think people need to be thinking about the singularity that's coming up with AI. And most importantly, they need to understand that there's a Dyson sphere headed our way that's 21 million miles in diameter, bigger than our sun.
Well, I'm sorry, now, what's coming our way?
Dyson sphere that's 21 million miles in diameter, bigger than our sun.
Dyson sphere?
Of course.
Okay. I know what a Dyson sphere is, and I've heard talk of it.
I know in detail because you know I was mentored by the NASA astronaut that was here from Cape.
Okay.
So, but the question I have, according to the Credit River case of 1968, according to the Credit River case of 1968 that proves all mortgages are fraud, all student loans are fraud, all credit cards and all that and car loans are fraud, how do you see this student loan situation going?
Well, I don't know where it's going to go with Biden on this, but I do know that, education should be relatively free. That's my strong opinion. I think a person should be able to receive a college education equal and better to what's given today. I think better than what's given today by the time they reach the ninth grade, if we give a formal and proper education. And, if we start our children right off the bat with a serious education, a classical education, alongside of even in the beginning of learning their ABCs, we can start that process right off the beginning. But and as they progress through, by the time they get into the third grade, fourth grade, they should be reading in what is referred to as an eighth or a ninth grade level, which is a lot higher than the literal eighth or ninth grade level we have today. College education should be achieved by the time an individual gets through ninth grade. I strongly believe that. Now, if a person wants to pursue their education further to get a doctorate, of course, that's a whole different story. And again, people shouldn't have to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to get such an education.
Like me.
Yeah, so, I mean, something needs to be done about that. What can be done? I think we have to have discussions on this. I think there's a lot of things we have to talk about and learn. We did start a page here. Let me see if I can open this up. It should be...
I heard you talking about, the credit system. Somebody said something about everything's going to be converted to credit. And, of course, when it comes to...
What do you mean everything's going to be turned to credit? I don't understand.
When everything's going to be based on the basis of your credit score. I heard that earlier.
That's the Great Reset.
Yeah.
But there's another reset that's going to be based in gold, and we don't want the Klaus Schwab Great Reset because that's the communist reset. And I don't believe it's going to go there. We're not going to go on that digital social credit system because if we are, we're done. That's the end of America. That's the end of humanity, actually, So I don't think it's going to go that way. I do believe the white hats and Trump are in control there, And I mean, I don't agree with everything he did, but he did what he had to do to stay there and he made deals with them when he first went in. But he's hurt them, and he's got them on the run now. When you make a deal with the mob, there's a certain agreement. They have to honor their deals because they wouldn't be able to make deals otherwise. You know what I'm saying? So they say you do this and we'll do that. That's what he's done. The one thing he didn't do, he was out. My thing was with the shot. I said, these things. I knew it was a bioweapon to begin with. And he was there. Oh, we're gonna get him in and stuff because he had to. Because they were going to shut us down for over 10 years with these.
Yeah, but he didn't tell them to put poison into it. But go ahead.
Well, he went by what they told him. But he knew that what they were doing was not right, and he couldn't stop it because they would have either killed him or took him out of office or whatever. You know what I mean? And he went bankrupt. They bailed him out. He owed them a certain amount of things, so he went ahead and he paid his debts off to them. But he's cut their income. He's shut down their child trafficking. He's shut down their money. He's going after the families, those families that are running everything, and they're hurting now, and they're panicking, which is why they're dangerous. But I think that you're going to see there is going to be no interest on money. That's all going to go away. You know,
yeah, we're going to go to constitutional money. That's where we're going to.
That's right. There's going to be interest is usury, and that's all going to disappear. So as far as the student loans and stuff go, I think that's all going to just go in the toilet because it's all baloney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
maybe I'll get my money
back. About that. You know what I mean? And so, and as far as getting money with the bonds, the way that there's a lot of money is everybody that touched it is liable. So if you can get $250,000 or you make a settlement for $100,000 on one person, there's look at everybody that's touched your house. You know how many people that are there that can that you can attach to their insurance. There's a lot more money than you could even use, probably, Felicia. So I'm gonna let you know, John is working with the same guy that you're talking to. John wants to be very careful about how he does this, though. He doesn't jump into anything without knowing that we're completely legal and lawful and that it won't come back and bite us. But I think you're on the right path, and we're still looking at that. We're looking at what you're looking at, okay? And
I'm home. So.
Well, I think you should do what you're doing because it never goes to court.
Yeah, it could be settled quickly.
The guy, that's the way he operates. You go in, you make a claim, and then you give them a chance to settle. And that's common law. That's this whole negotiation and what do they call that when you negotiate, John? Arbitration?
It's arbitration, yeah.
It's more like arbitration.
Well, this is arbitration, yeah. I mean, arbitration should be the first way to go before
you
go
into court. And the reason that it doesn't come back to bite you see, if you go after judges, they don't like that. The whole system doesn't like that. The judges don't like that. They want to protect the judges because nobody would be a judge if they got consequences to all their decisions. So they hold a certain immunity unless they're really bad, you know what I mean? But when you go in and use the system that they set up, the insurance, the bonds, the insurance stuff, look at tough titty. They, you know what I mean? If you let somebody attach to your bond, it's because you did something wrong, and they can't blame anybody but themselves for that. So I think it's a safer way of doing things is the point that I'm making, because it's their own system that they set up that's in place to protect us. And the thing is we've been ignorant. We haven't been collecting on it because we didn't know that we could. So these things are going to open up now. People are going to wake up. There's going to be a great awakening. And you're going to see things turn very quickly, more quickly than you could have believed it. You know what I mean? And look at God's justice. It even says happens in a day. I mean, it might be figuratively speaking, but it's going to be a day. And when you look at time, it's going to change so fast. It's going to be one way one day, and it's going to be the next way the next day.
It took them 200 years to create and get us to where we're at, where they think they can finally take us down, which they would have if Trump didn't become president.
But I believe it's going to go back the other way quicker.
Real quick. Absolutely. It's not going to take 200 years.
No, it's not, because there's no months. There's really no learning curve. There's just a matter of putting. Look at it. It's all in there. All we got to do is follow what they wrote. That's it. You know, follow the Constitution. Our forefathers were way, way ahead of their times. And they put a lot of remedies in there for us, multiple remedies that are all connected. They're all connected, and we're just learning this now, how advanced they were, because they had better schooling than we did. They read all the great writings and stuff. We think we're smarter than them. We don't even make a pimple on them, you know. So I think there's a good reason to be optimistic with this whole thing. Like I think you're going to be restored, and I think you're going to be very happy at the end of the day. That's what I feel.
Remember, we are casualties of war, and this war has been going on for 250 years. I mean, going even before the United States was even created. Like I said, we go back to 1750 when the Bar Association was created on the shores, on our shores here when we were colonies. But look, here's the bottom line. Restitution must be made, okay? These people have stolen so much, and as you know, as President Trump had said, you know, when you rob a jewelry store and you get caught, you got to give back the jewels, okay? Well, they got to give back the jewels, all right? All of the islands and properties and, you know...
Well, I want to tell you something. He's already gotten much of that back. You don't hear about it because the news media is corrupt. But they've collected most of that money back.
Well, I don't know if most of it, because they got to seize property. Look at the Rothschilds have tremendous amounts of property, houses that's worth a fortune.
They have underground gold too, though. They got tons and tons of gold.
Right, and also the businesses they have, you know, all of the major corporations.
He's already tied them up and seized them with his executive orders.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get to the point what's going to be done with that. When all of that is seized, I mean, it just doesn't just come to the people of the United States. This is a worldwide thing. So, you know, restitution has to come to the people throughout the world ultimately. But the United States has the biggest interest. The United States has been, you know, we've been suffering the most economically speaking because we've had the most economically speaking. You know, generally speaking, we were reasonably all very well off, economically speaking, to some degree, like, let's say, you know, around World War II, after World War II, I mean, things were, homes cost a couple of $1,000s to buy a home, a car, or, you know, $900, $2,000.
And even at that, we didn't even experience a fraction of what we're going to experience, because they have had their fingers in there. England has been in there. We've been paying the England and the Bar Association, all that. Even when we were having those good days, they still had their fingers in there, and like you said, they just took this time to take more and more from us. I mean, those were relatively good days, but they weren't even just a taste of where we could be. It's a 5,000-year leap when this thing comes through. It's going to be beyond your imagination.
Yes, yeah, so, and a lot of things, the technology they've been holding back and stealing from the people that have come up, all that's going to come to surface. But let's get back to restitution here. You know, we're not talking millions, we're not talking billions, we're talking trillions. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in property and all kinds of different assets that they have. You know, the corporations that are making, look at, you know, these big corporations that are making them. See, each one of these corporations are billions and billions of dollars making. They're all going to be seized, and they're going to have to be auctioned off. Some of it may, I don't know how they work it out, but anyway, a lot of it's going to be auctioned off, all of the property and money. So people are going to be restored. We're all going to get something out of this. But again, it's not just the United States, it's worldwide. But going to these problems, okay, you know, when we look at what's going on, we did create a page. If you go to Starter Committee of Safety, highlight Starter Committee of Safety on our blue line here, a bar, and come down, almost down to the bottom, you click on National Issues. Okay, now that's a page I put up, and I just threw a bunch of things and thoughts up here for right now that we have to consider and start thinking and talking about. And this is something that has to be discussed, you know, from county to county, state to state, across the nation, to, you know, problems that we need to solve. You know, I, you know, one of the things I want to add on this, which may be in here already, I don't even know, but, you know, if I'm going to do business with somebody and I'm going to give them money, I expect them to have a phone. I mean, you take Skype, for instance, you can't get those people by phone, yet they're taking my money because I have the paid service with Skype. I mean, Skype is free, and most of the people use the free service, but I use the paid service, and it's inexpensive. But nevertheless, they took my money. They should be there with a phone. There are a lot of businesses, a lot of people you deal with, and companies that do have a phone, and they never answer it anyway. They just put you in a circle, and they keep pushing you towards, go out to the web, or you know, wait here and get the get recordings, or and then they just drop the call or whatever. You never get to a real person. That should be against the law. That's Congress's job to take care of that, to make sure that if you're going to be selling something or doing business with somebody, then you have to be available by phone, as well as, of course, directly by mail. A lot of these, my contract with my my publisher, for instance, which I am suing, I'm in the process now of starting with letter writing, then a notice and demand, and then a lawsuit, and I have to hunt out to find their address. I went to the contract, and I didn't even realize their address is not in the contract. The contract between myself and them, it gives my information, my all the information about me. I think it even has my phone number in there. But when it gets to them, it just says, you know, Dorrance's publishing company, and no address, no contact. I mean, I did find it. But I can't tell you how many times I get frustrated spending an hour on the phone, 2 hours on the phone, never getting through to people or corporations that don't have phones. This is something Congress needs to deal with, okay? You know, a lot of these internet businesses, they want you to go to their website, and it frustrates you. And I got to go get totally educated in a new way just to deal with them and to find the information. It's crazy. But the point is that some of these things, for instance, you know, a constitutional crisis, we have to discuss things and we have to figure things out and how we're going to go about it. There is a group, okay, out in, I believe it's Pennsylvania, okay, and they have a statewide organization, and they're trying to deal with problems, and I'm going to try to connect with them. And they need to break down to county, because all politics, if I might use that word, is local, okay? Dealing with the political process, it's all about being local. You can't do this from the state position. You can't do this from the national position, because that's just nothing but corruption and control. You have to do this from the grassroots position, which brings you down to a county, where the first order of business is to take control of your local government. That's the first order of business, dealing with your sheriff, working through your town, the courts in your town, all of the different government agencies in your town, right up to the county level, and then dealing with the state level by connecting with other county committees of safety. That's why you want to get at least 50% of the counties going, and that'll be clout, okay, because it's enough really to push that power and authority. But the bottom line is to deal with the state problem and the state issues, you have to get together, and that's what the purpose of committees of correspondence is all about. And we will try to educate and try to, you know, get those conversations going within the states, and hopefully keep them on point, which is something we're going to work on in hopefully soon, but at a later date. But the thing is, you deal with a national problem, now you have to do state to state, okay? So in order to push this through, you know, you want to be able to get enough committees of safety so that you can put enough weight onto the Congress, because you have control of most of the Congress. As long as we have more than 50% of the states involved and 50% of the counties within those states involved, now you got real power and authority to control that the U.S. Congress. Eventually, the idea is for every county to be involved. Okay, that of course is the key, but we have to hit that halfway mark in order to really get the real power, and we can get power even and push our will even without having even that much 50%. We could do it a lot less. But 50% is a slam dunk at that point. Everything we want, we will get. As long as we come together, discuss it, discuss the problem, say, yeah, we have to deal with this problem. Okay, let's all of us go back, and we're going to put the pressure on our congressmen. We're going to put the pressure on the people that are representing us. And we're going to make them do what they have to do and let them know, you don't do our will, we're going to do a recall. Because we have government by consent, and all we have to do is come up with one issue, and you disobey that one issue, well, then you're denying our government by consent, the will of the people, so we need to remove you and replace you. This is done by the elite as it is to the committeemen. When a county chairman makes a phone call, or even a state chairman, which is, of course, the higher level, okay, makes a phone call on whatever level of government we're talking about, state, county, or even federal, okay, when that county chairman makes that phone call to an individual and says, hey, we got a problem, we need to meet, and we need to discuss, and they will meet, they will discuss, and they will do the will of that committee chairman. Why? The reason is because if they don't do the will of that committee chairman, particularly, let's say, at a state level, they don't do the will of that, which is supposed to represent the will of all the people at that point. But if they don't do the will, then we're not supporting you in the next election. And if we just got you in, I think we'll take you out. And they could do a recall. Now, I heard in Pennsylvania someone said, well, they don't have the law to put forward a recall. Well, who cares? We don't need that law. The law already exists in common law. It's a just thing. It's common law. If a person is a problem, you can recall them. We don't need a statute to give us the power or the authority to do a recall. Okay? So we could do that recall. But anyway, there is a group. I want to try to make contact with them, hopefully connect them with us, and let them start to get an education. And they can meet on the state level if they want, because eventually we should meet on the state level within our own, you know, respective states. But, okay, they need to be working on a county level. It must be grassroots. It starts with taking control of your sheriff. and taking control of the sheriff the same way I just said how you take control of a state representative. Take control of your sheriff. Taking control of your towns and your villages and your cities. Taking control, eventually working together with taking control of your state and so on right up to the federal level. But it can only be done by the people, and the people have to participate. Now, I'm going to be giving a report soon on how many committees of safety we've got going and where they're at what level. There's the level of just starting and the level of really gotten to the point where they got the sheriff working with them and already are talking and communicating with their local governments. I do know my last count, but I don't have details on it. We're working on that right now. My last count, we have 121 committees of safety that have executed. And that count goes back a month ago, so hopefully we have a lot more than that. But I don't have the information on the details of where they're at and how far they have progressed. I will be given a report, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we'll see. Right now we're trying to organize this and get all the reports going in so that we can give an account to the people of where we're at. And that should excite other people to say, yeah, I need to do it in my county too, and get more and more going. But this is how we take our nation back, and this is how we control our representatives. And we can have 100% control. So we need to discuss these problems and these things. And, no matter what they are. But anyway, I got a list. We have a constitutional crisis. We have an economic crisis. We have a health crisis. We have an environmental crisis. We have an educational crisis. That, by the way, the educational crisis, I made the decision I'm going to start now. I've been thinking about this, and I got everything I need. Ultimately, it's just a matter of putting it together and understanding how to relate and communicate this to different age children. And that is to create a proper curriculum in our schools with civics and Constitution, knowing the Constitution and the true history and our founding fathers and common law and who we are as a people. We're a Christian nation. I mean, all these things need to be taught to our children. We need to teach it to ourselves first. But we're going to be teaching, I'm going to start working on textbooks for children from the first grade right on up to the ninth grade. I don't know if as a matter of fact, I'm going to try to partnership with Brent. I spoke with Brent about this maybe 6 months ago, and he thought that was interesting. So I think he could be very helpful and fill in a lot of gaps of things that I don't know, and maybe we can even find a third or a fourth partner to work with us on this project. But we need to get a proper education into our school. We need to get a classical education into the school. We did a thing a couple of weeks ago on a classical education and the importance of that classical education. And anybody that hasn't seen it, they should go and watch that video that we recorded that Monday night program. I'm trying to think where... As we go on, maybe I'll find it and I'll pop it up. But anyway, we have a media crisis. We have a world crisis. And we need to start discussing this. And these discussions must take place not by a small group of people, certainly not a small group of people on a national level like National Liberty Alliance. We'll try to orchestrate it. That's all we're going to do. And I'll be involved with it from the perspective of my state and my county, New York. But we have to come together across the nation and start discussing some of these issues, come to agreements and come to an agreement that, yeah, we're going to push our congressmen, our representatives to do A, B, and C and so on. But again, this starts at the grassroots level in the county and works its way up. That's where we got to go. All right, let me move on because we've spent a lot of time.
Okay, one more statement and then that's it.
Make
the statement. He and or they were given a certain amount of time to reign. Babylon is falling. The Creator is coming. Have a great night.
Amen. Thank you. Isaiah 14.
I want to add one more thing to what you said. As far as Congress and the Senate goes, they're taken care of. We don't have to worry about them. They're going to be replaced. They know everything that they did, every jot and tittle that they took from China. The white hats have it all. We have to worry about our counties, and we'll be
right. But we also at some point have to realize we have to control the new people that come in. So.
Absolutely, but that's going to be in place because we're going to have the Constitution back in effect, and all these people that broke the Constitution, guess what? They're going to be they're going to be prosecuted under it, because they're, whether they know it or not, they're under it right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they've committed treason, all kinds of stuff. So they're going to be prosecuted, maybe with military tribunals. Well, probably, because that's the only way we're going to get it done, to take too long otherwise. But that's the long and the short of it. That's why I say it's going to happen in a day, because you're going to have the top changed out right away. Boom. And then we're going to have to deal with these rotten sheriffs and these ones that are no good. And I think that's going to happen quickly, because when you get people that realize what the power and authority of the sheriff is, and that, they're going to want to run. They're going to want to do that job. You know what I mean? Right now, who do you get to do it? You get retired cops and all that. And I don't think that's the best person for the job anyway. I don't think a law enforcement official is really necessarily makes a good sheriff. He has to be a constitutionalist, and he has to have that.
And it's up to the people to school that sheriff. Okay?
That's right.
And when a sheriff comes in and talks to you, and you know, maybe he says something, well, it doesn't matter what they say. The point is if they're not interested in getting an education, you have to stick on that subject. What do you mean you don't want to get an education? What do you mean you don't want to learn? You know, what do you really know about the Constitution? How can you be a law enforcer if you don't know the Constitution and you don't understand it and our history and who we are as a people and our heritage? You know, how can you do that? How can you not understand, if you don't understand the difference between law and equity, how can you apply the law? And how can you know the difference between the two? You see, this is why it's so important to start on the grassroots level. It all starts with the law, okay, and getting that sheriff involved with the law, the real law, and understand what that means and what it is. And if they're not interested in that, then you got to let them know, maybe it's time for us to find another sheriff. When you have enough people, you have 20, 30 people, or 40 people, and even more, come together in one place, and you're forming your committee of safety, and you call for that sheriff to come in, and he sees all those people, he understands those are the people that will support him if he's doing the right thing, but it's also the people who will take him out if he's not going to do the right thing. Right. But with that said, we need to move on to our next caller. We've spent a lot of time. By the way, is Brent here? Anybody seen Brent? I don't see him in here. Well, if he is, let us know. All right, I'm going to pass. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I had some trouble with my start meeting. I have to talk to somebody and get it reinstalled. I was having trouble. But anyway.
Okay, I was going to say I passed the board over to you.
I could do that, I think.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll be a little in and out, but I'll be here. And I got to leave at 5 to 11. Got to go pick my son up at a little after 11 from work. But I'll pass the board on to you. Let me get the next person going, and do you take control of the board?
Do you have the questions and the I don't see it here. Where's the
down on the bottom, and you got to be careful because I made some mistakes here from time to time. Down on the bottom to the right side, you'll see Q&A queue, and you'll see attendees.
I see attendees, but I don't see Q&A.
Well, go to the left of that, you'll see Q&A queue.
It says record.
Oh, no. No, that's all the way down the bottom. Yeah. So underneath the list of people on the right side, you'll see attendees and Q&A queue.
Wait a minute. I have to hit attendees. Oh, okay. See, I didn't hit attendees. Now the list comes up.
Now, be very careful, because sometimes I get confused and hit the end of Q&A or the next
instead of the next one
on the bottom.
That's so the end of it, yeah.
I try to keep on the Q&A queue down there and not roll over too much to the attendees. Okay,
right.
But then you come up, and let me hit the next button for you, and then you could take it from here. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I hit the next question. It's Andromeda. You got the mic, Andromeda. Gerard, you got the
mic.
Number one, have you gone to the joiners? Have you found mine? Because, I tell you, I'm not sure what happened to it.
Yeah, we're going through all of them now, and it depends, you know, we work with volunteers and people work and have a life and family and other things going on, so they can only put so much time in it, so we don't have anyone working, you know, 40 hours a week or anything like that on it. If we did, we could probably get
it. You know what I mean, but I'm not sure what happened to it.
No, we have to organize it and put it in a digestible way. We have to be able to, there's a lot of things in the background that's got to be dealt with and be able to communicate directly with the joiners via email. We got to make phone calls to all the joiners to get
what I mean. What I mean is, I, without saying, I'm not sure. You know, I need to know if it's even still there.
I will.
You know what I'm saying?
I'll make a note. If you ask me next Monday, I'll make a note to go in to see if you're in there. You should be in there, but if not, I'll let you know one way or the other.
All right. Number two, my husband brought to my attention. You know, I lost my house. You know, years ago. When I didn't, you know many of the things I know now, to a non-judicial foreclosure, too. You know,
so
it put me out.
How much can you dig up on that? Do you have any paperwork from that? Go down to the court, get information on that? You're not going to find it in the court because, again, it's a non-judicial foreclosure.
They just did what they wanted to do and put me out, and now someone else
back,
is.
Look, you see, they have statutes, and the statutes make statutes of limitations, okay, which is a bunch of BS. It's just baloney, okay? But common law has limitations only, also. You know, a case can only be so old at some point, you know, people are dead, people have moved, people forget, they don't remember, papers are lost, or you don't have the evidence, you can't do nothing. So that's the limitations under common law. But you cannot have a statute of limitation saying, hey, in 3 years it can no longer be heard or anything like that. I mean, you can have a case that's 20 years old. As long as you could get the evidence together, then you can open that case and go forward. So work on your evidence, see what you can put together.
Because my house was broken into, and many documents I kept in a metal safe. The safe was stolen. Not my house, but another apartment I stayed in was stolen by a criminal family. So, I'm not sure what I have outside of what
was
there.
Go back and look through. You know, you must look. There must be some evidence somewhere. You just have to dig it up. The fact that they've changed the titles over. You can do a title search. Look, you could do a title search, and you can see how change over to a corporation or some corporation and then eventually sold to another individual. So you could start there.
Because I did own it. And matter of fact, I paid for the most part cash at the time when I came down here from after leaving Connecticut and then from Alabama and I came down to Florida. So, I mean, there's evidence that I did own it.
All right. Well, I don't want to spend too much time on the issue, but we can spend time on it when you get information together.
Let me get to the next question because I know you're on long with another person. Okay, now you say you're done with the Coronto. Now, did you address in there still the fact that certain people, like I told you, there are certain defendants in my case that do not have bonds, including state judges?
Well, look,
county judges.
We're going after the bonds after the people that are the controllers of the case, and that would be the judges and the lawyers. Those are the people that have the bonds. Those are the people that have denied due process. Those are the controllers. They were the orchestrators of these problems and situations. They're the ones that got to pay. Now,
the
a lot of people say they don't have bonds when, in fact, they do.
Everybody's got a bond out there.
That's right, because they're...
Oh, well, put it this way. They refused to answer the question when I confronted them. You know, so it was both state...
I've researched this enough to know that, and I used to think that this would be a wrong thing, but it depends on how it's put together. Look, the state realizes a lot of everybody, anybody that's elected or appointed, someone that has the value, that takes the oath, okay, those are the people that must be bonded, every one of them, which includes the clerk, it goes right down to, you know, the people who run the county, the towns, but the thing is this, okay, a lot of people may not be able to get a bond, and there are a lot of problems with that. So what the states have done, okay, is they've gone and got a collective bond for all of these people. But I got to believe that collective bond requires each one of those individuals to put up their financials, number one, and also put some money into the bond on maybe on a yearly basis or however they work that out. So it's being paid for by them, okay, and not being paid for by the people. Some years back, we discovered that there's not a judge in New York State that has a bond directly, that there's a collective bond. It's a collective thing that the state has.
On the blank.
And I said, whoa, that's illegal. You got the people paying themselves back. That's wrong. But you see, as long as they're really putting their financials in, which is they're putting their properties up, okay? And they're also paying so much in, and so you got a kitty going on that's collecting money that's accumulating for the purpose of paying out. Then you have a then you have something that's lawful and something that the people are not really getting injured on paying themselves back through taxes or whatever the case may be. So that is is lawful. And so they all have a bond, okay? Everything that I know or have done at this point in time concerning the writ quo warranto and the notice and demand for chasing the bonds, everything is in the paperwork that I just gave you. Now, the amount and some more information that I need for execution, that's my next step now. That's where I'm heading to now. And maybe in the next Monday or Monday after that, I'll have that information and be able to finalize the information that I have, give it to the people to know what it is. I'm going to be calling the individual we've been talking with and get a meeting with him. And I'm going to try to do that this week if I can. It's up to really being able what his time is at. And then I'll deliver.
I can apply this for a public servant that refuses to give their last name as well.
Yeah, that's against the law for them to not give you a name. Okay, look at that. If they are an oath taker, then their information is there and it's in the record. You can get it. And when they refuse to give you that, well, that's breaking the law also. They're hiding. Why are you hiding? That's the thing.
Of course. I mean, I asked the head clerk of the federal clerk for a subordinate clerk supervisor's name, and she turned it over to the attorney general, and then they answered for that clerk, which is not, I already know, is against the law, you know, because I asked that clerk. I didn't ask that person, whoever interfered, all right?
Remember this. I read this a little earlier today, and I've made this comment many, many times. U.S. versus Tweel. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or a moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. They have to respond. Okay? The name is on the record. If it's a county thing, then it's on the county website. If it's a state thing, it's on the state
federal
website. You'll find their names, and if it's a federal, you'll find their names there too. You just got to go research it out. You know, they try to hide things, and I find, look at Google has put a lot of garbage out there, and I'm finding it more and more as I'm doing research that I'm getting to places that I can't get the information I'm looking for because they take me, like I mentioned earlier, I'm looking for the Bar Association, the British Bar Association, and they send me to the British pubs. I mean, you know, I'm looking, you go to a bar, that's a pub. I mean, and I go all the way, go deep, 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 you know, 50 pages deep, and they're still talking about pubs, okay? So that's a problem. Now, there's nothing in Wikipedia at this point. I was looking to Wikipedia on the Bar Association. Again, you know, they're just ignoring it. They're cleaning it. They're just ignoring it. You can't get the info. So it is getting harder.
Well, the person hung up on me, and then when I put it in writing, she hung up on me three times when I asked for her name, and then I put it in writing, and then she turned it over to the attorney general to try to so-called intimidate me, and they just said something about what right I don't have, and this and that, to try to get a back and forth non-argument outside the record, you know, someone I didn't even ask.
Let me only because of time, and I have spent a lot of time with a couple of people here, and we really got to move on. If you have a question or anything that we could try to respond to for you, and as far as that case you're talking about, if you can get some information, we'll talk about it, and if we need to be, we'll talk personally somewhere else, you know, to get more deeper into your case if we have to. But again, you know, generically speaking, if you can get the information, you tell me what information you got, I'll let you know whether I think it's enough, and we can pursue it. Okay,
which information? What do you mean? You mean about my house or about the joint that I already
mortgage foreclosure. The mortgage Your mortgage foreclosure.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a record somewhere. I mean, because it's the fact is that I did own it, you know, and it was taken from me wrongfully.
All right, Jimmy, do you have a question?
Huh?
Do you have any questions?
No, just you know. I would like to go back and deal with that too, but the other thing is,
we'll work with you on that. Okay, and again, you know, I've got as much as I can on the things we've been speaking about that you've been inquisitive about for a couple of Mondays, and I've been anxious to get it out for the people also, and that is on this core want on a notice and demand. It's up there. You can take a look at it and use it if you want. And,
okay, where is it now? It's under which category?
Yeah, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight Education Starts Here, come down to law. Okay, and when you come to law, then you come down to court forms and process right there. And you'll find all that information in there. Okay?
All right, so it's only dealing with the judges, not the rest of the defendants in the case.
Yeah, that's all. And that's all we need to do. As long as people get restored, look, at they're the orchestrators of this whole thing. Yeah, the mortgage companies will probably change. Well, let's see. You see, if we have to, we can go into the courts to deal with the mortgage companies. But I think the fact that the judges and the lawyers, they're the ones that are the orchestrators. They're the ones you go after. And as long as if it's a $250,000 home and the settlement is made for $250,000, we should be happy with that. I mean, yeah, there's also you can go for pain and suffering, so you could take it back into the courts for that and go after the principals. That's a possibility. And I would think people might want to try that too. Huh?
Okay. All right. Remember, there's two sets of judges that I'm addressing. It's the county ones that caused me to have to go to the federal in the first place.
We'll work all that out when the time comes on who we're going to chase after. Okay? Because I think it's down to the lower level. But yeah, you're right. We do have a second level to go after if necessary. But we'll have to see what is just to do and who is, you know, we got to figure all that out. It gets back to due process. I mean, you can go after them for violating your right of due process, denial of due process.
Yeah. I got to go to the next caller.
We really, I shouldn't have spent as much time as I did on other things because we got a lot of people in the queue. So we got to go to the next caller and we'll talk again, I'm sure, next week. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. You got the control, so hit the button.
Yeah. Okay.
Next question. That's
all. Okay. Fred. Fred Gerds, are you there? 980 area code.
980 area code, Fred.
How come it's coming up as a question mark where his...
Wait a second. Yeah, he's still on... he's got his own... He's muted himself.
Oh, is that what
not
that
a,
is?
It's not a mute that we've got on him.
He's Fred, you got to unmute yourself. I can't unmute you. You have to, what is it, star?
Well, no, he's in the queue. He probably maybe has his mic muted or something because, let me try clicking that and see if anything happens with that. Pick this question. Let's try this. There it is. I think he just went unmuted. There he is.
Oh.
I lost him.
No, he disappeared. Okay, okay. Kansas City, 816. What's your first name? You got it.
I muted me. Kansas.
Yeah, go ahead. You're unmuted. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Hi, thank you. So I have two questions. Are you guys doing anything with the government bankruptcy? Because my understanding is if they're in bankruptcy, they shouldn't be doing business and they shouldn't be taking you to court. They would be a plaintiff in error or something like that. Because,
that's all going to take care of itself. We can't, because there is a bankruptcy and it's going to become very obvious. But that's part of the reset of the money. That's part of going back to gold and silver. The reset is going to be handled up on the top. That's above our pay grade, and it's going to take care of itself anyway. And look at you, you've been made chattel for years. You got a birth certificate they've been trading on, and that's one of the ways you're going to get restitution. If you're rich, you're considered preferred stock. If you're not rich, you're considered common stock. But everybody is going to get fees in their account based on where they are in life. So if you're common stock, let's say common stock, I think every man, woman, and child will receive $100,000 in account. I think this is their preliminary plans from what I hear. So even if you're dirt poor, the fact that you've been working and they've been stealing, your money through social, through income tax and all that, They're going to do across-the-board restitution for everybody just to get us up to speed. I mean, as far as anything else that happened in your life, homes you lost and all that, that's all different. That you have to go after them for that. But as far as the bankruptcy goes and what they did to us and the restitution, that's all been thought out and that's all been worked out by those powers that be that are in control of this gold and silver that's going to be given back to the people. So we don't have to worry about that. Like, you're going to have to worry about your local people, your local judges, your local sheriffs, because we're going to operate on the local level. That's where we really have control, you know. And, you know, you shouldn't be going into the federal court unless it's a federal issue, which means it's a constitutional issue that's usually due process, and that's what Scalia said. You know, those are the things that make it to the Supreme Court are violations of the Constitution on a local level. And they shouldn't have to go to the Supreme Court to get fixed. They should be fixed at the state level, because you got three levels of state to fix it. But, you know, because it was so corrupt and the judges were bought and paid for and all that, that's going to go away. All these George Soros judges that taken money and all these governors, I mean, Pompeo stood there and he told the governors, he said, we know who you are. We know what money you took, because there's nothing. There's not a phone call. There's not a text. There's not a bank account that they don't know about. They know everything. So, I mean, they wanted this system. But look, they're going to get bit by the system they gave us, because they're exposed as much or worse than anybody. And that's what's going to come back and bite them. And I don't believe that you've got to worry about that. I think that that's going to be taken care of for us. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, not so much as a worry, but the ethical part, where if you're bankrupt and you don't have any money, you should not be running business. And so the fact that they still are, I just thought that would be a good thing to address when you're in the courtroom, and you know, there should be no courts. They shouldn't be.
Right now, they're not acknowledging that. They're not acknowging that.
So yeah, right. And of course, they won't acknowledge anything if we're ignorant to it. So that's why I was asking, is anybody attacking that area?
But, no, you know. Because they look at you like you have three heads, and then they say you're a sovereign citizen, and they start making accusations and stuff. But that's going away. That's not going to happen. Because all these people that are bankrupt, that are doing business, they're going to be arrested. Right. Plain and simple, that's it. Because they've broken the law, they've committed treason in a lot of cases, you know. But nevertheless, these are crimes against the country and against humanity. Look at these corporations are the worst, and they're going to be the first ones that need to go down, and. You know, our biggest thing is to remove our support of them. Don't shop with them. Don't use the pharmaceutical companies.
That's why I think about the bankruptcy.
Those are things that we can do that's going to help cave them quicker, but they're going down anyway.
Yeah.
Because even through their own paperwork, you know, they like to brag about what they do, and I'm telling you what. What happened?
Yeah.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have one more question.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know what you're asking, but go ahead.
I sent an email because I found a document that talked about a theocratic government before Columbus era. And so I was hoping that somebody took a look at it and you know, gave me their opinion on it.
I don't know. Where did you send the email to?
It's a question at...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. What was the question?
The question was, did anybody know about it? It's a proclamation on the Illinois government website. And it says that the land was governed theocratically by the indigenous people. Since Pharaoh time, they claim, like, been here a long time,
Yeah, they had been here for a very, very long time. You're right, but they didn't organized in the way that you know, I guess you'd say Western was organized, in the sense, you know, they were moving around the land. I forget what you call that, but yeah. What about it?
Yeah, because the document saying that they were organized and they went
Well, the Indians definitely were abused. There's no doubt about that. They should be compensated in some way or form. And you know, there are reasonable things that could be done. You know, I was talking to some Indians back a few years ago, and trying to figure out restitution and different things that could be done for them. But they were taking some, you know, unreasonable steps that they had to realize. I don't want to get into it. It's too much to discuss at this point to get into it, but something should be done for them, there's no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
any other question?
I don't want to touch. I just want to make a statement. I don't want to touch the restitution until unless they're talking about gold and silver, because I know that fiat is done.
Yeah,
I know that for sure. But thank you.
All right, thank you. I don't know what Gerard. Are you here? Okay. Well, next, take our next caller. Now we're at someone from Kansas City, area code 816. What's your first name?
LaRonda.
Okay, you got the mic. Bear in mind, I'm going to have to end this call very abruptly if Gerard doesn't get back in the next 5 minutes, because I got to go pick my son up from work. But in any event, we're taking your call. Go ahead. What was your name again? LaRonda?
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead.
I was just going to ask, when y'all talk about the joinder, is it just for real estate properties, or can it be for any type of personal property? And what I mean by that is, I've had my SUV illegally repossessed by a title loan company, and so that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, we're only taking certain look at we're doing this for two reasons: compassion, and I'd like to think we were doing it for compassion first and foremost, but also for the benefit of the people for evidence. And so what we decided to do is help people that had serious problems. People, for instance, that needed habeas corpus because they were in jail. People who were losing their homes through non-judicial foreclosures, whether it's tax or mortgage. We had done a few other types, and with CPS, which really gets back to habeas corpus type things, CPS and APS, taking our elderly away from us and control of their lives and whatever they owned and taking our children. You know, these were the kind of cases where we did do a couple of traffic cases. We shouldn't have done that. And there was a few other types of cases. I don't know what they are. We're working that out right now. We probably shouldn't have taken them on either. We should have just stuck really with the people that are really in a painful situation. But look, we can, you know, assist. Let me see what we could do about assisting people in other cases. One of the things I've done is people need to be able to learn to represent themselves, to go to court, and if they can't articulate themselves, then maybe they'd have to hire a lawyer, but you have to make sure you get a lawyer that's not a bar attorney and that will take you into a court of law and truly represent you. And so that's but you need to learn the law. I wrote a book, Government by Consent. As a matter of fact, it's right up on the page right now on the right hand side. No, not Government by Consent, Court Access in the Common Law. It's on the left hand side. So this book here that I wrote will teach people how to write papers, how to get into the court, how things work. And for people who really want to know, there's three things you could do, and I promise you at the end of these three things, you will be able to represent yourself in any issue. Okay. Number one, take all of our courses. Education starts here. You click on that and take all of our courses. Okay. And our courses you know, consists of we have a foundation study. We have the civics course, which, by the way, I meant to mention this early on. Our civics course should be up and running within the next week. I discovered the problem, and I'm working on it, and it really was a YouTube problem. But we're going to get those courses back up and open, hopefully, in the next week. Government by Consent course, free militia course, and anybody that's pushing for the jury administrators, they have to take an accredited jury administrators course. But if you take those courses, get the two books, Government by Consent and Court Access, and read through them from beginning to end. Court Access Court, after you've done all that, done the first book, then go to the Court Access Court, read from the beginning to end, and then you go back and use it as a reference book in order to write your case. I promise you, by the time you get through all that education, you'll have so much information in your brain, you'll have a whole new mindset, you'll see things from a different point of view. And you'll be able to represent yourself. Now, some people have a problem articulating themselves. They know what they want to do. They know what they want to say. They know what they want to write, but they can't express themselves in a court. And maybe they can't get the strategies going. Well, that's where you can have assistance of counsel. And it doesn't have to be a bar attorney. It doesn't have to be an attorney, you know, a lawyer. I definitely don't want to be a bar attorney, but it could be anybody that has the ability to articulate themselves and understand enough of what you want and understand the process enough in order to bring your case before the court. But we should all learn to do this on our own. We should teach our children how to do this in school, so by the time they get out, they should be able to get up on the stage, talk to people, and represent themselves in court and do whatever it is that they have to do in life to be successful. So, all right. Hopefully that answered your question. That's where you got to start. Meanwhile, we can talk to you a little bit about cases, maybe a couple of weeks to a month down the line. I can give you a little information. But you have to start an education before we can really communicate. So that's what I suggest you to do. Okay?
Okay. One quick question. Yeah. I asked a judge, we had a hearing about a week and a half ago. I asked him, was he bonded? He goes, he said, what'd you say? So I repeated myself.
Huh?
He says, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, so I can't answer that question. Then he says, I've never had anyone to ask me that question, was he bonded? So is that enough to get him disqualified because he don't know anything like that?
Well,
and then since then,
what I did, we'll do a writ quo wanto. If you're in court, do a writ quo wanto in the court. We've got the, that's what we've talked about a lot tonight. If you missed it, okay, we'll go do a writ quo wanto, and then you put him to that position. Look, if he's responding that way for one of three reasons, okay, that I can think of anyway. Reason number one, he doesn't have a bond, which I don't think is the answer. Reason number two, he's got a bond. It's collective. It's operated ultimately, it's worked out by the state, orchestrated by the state, but funded by all of these people. But the problem is he's got his financials, okay, which means it's his house, his car, you know, whatever he owns, okay, everything is there, what kind of income he's got going, with the, you know, anything. So all that, his financials are there, so that's at a risk. So it could be that he's getting a little, he knows he's got a problem and he could lose things, you know, he doesn't want to lose things. And the third possibility is he's told to ignore it, delay it, deny it, whatever he can do to stop someone pursuing it. That's why I think the paper is going to be so powerful for people to use to get their due process recognized and get justice in the court.
And I since then asked the court reporter, which was his court reporter, for a copy of the transcripts. She done responded apologizing for the delay and said she's got to get in touch with some other peoples in regards to the matter. So it's getting ready to be a delay, but I'm taking them on. And I want to thank you, and you have a good day, sir.
Yes, good educator. Remember, the key to all success is education. And another thing is self-discipline. Anybody that doesn't have self-discipline is not going to be successful in life. People who are self-disciplined, that can discipline themselves and force themselves to stay on point and do the right thing and continue and complete whatever it is you need to complete. And that's just a matter of talking to yourself and forcing yourself to do it and telling yourself why you need to do it. But if you don't do that, then unfortunately, I think a lot of people, they've been so damaged by our educational system that was set up and the way things are around us. I mean, society in itself has destroyed us in a way that we are not a self-disciplined people. You know, you look at people in China and stuff, a lot of bad stuff in the government and stuff, but the way their children are in school, I saw some documentaries, particularly one, where things that happen, how they educate their children, their responses, and starting from, you know, grade one all the way up. It's amazing how they have organized and got the people involved in such a way for good things, maybe for evil too, unfortunately, I don't know, but I'd imagine to some degree that's the case because they have a terrible government. But communism in China is about to fall, just like, because that's part of the deep state also. Remember, that's an instrument of the deep state. And so that's about to fall anyway. But they're going to be headlong ahead of us to some degree if they ever get to the point of becoming a true republic. I mean, wow. But that's what we are. We should be, as a people, or Christian people, a Christian nation, being a common law republic, which means it's the only lawful republic. And if we truly were responding and doing the right things and teaching our children the right way and learning who we are as a people and our heritage and you know, pushing forward the morality and virtue as a people, as we should be doing under the king of the court, then nothing could stop us from accomplishing anything we want and need to do. And America is way ahead over anyone else just because of the fact that we have that in our past, in our history. And so it does affect all of us. People, we believe we're free. We believe we have liberty, even though we don't understand it much because we're uneducated. And even though we don't know a lot of the liberty we have, so therefore we don't exercise it. But even with that, I mean, there's like gut things that we've been, you know, you're not taking my gun away type attitude. You know, we got certain attitudes that has really kept this nation from falling. And but we can be so much stronger, so much more powerful, so much of everything, if only we buckle down, get some self-discipline, re-educate ourselves, make sure our children are educated, and freely you've been given, freely give back. We have a duty to give back to the people. We have a duty to be a good citizen, and that's not a word we should run away from. Our founding fathers used it 7 times in the Constitution. The enemy has just tried to redefine that, that's all. We're not going to let him do it. That's the fraud. But in any event, we have a duty to do the right thing, and we have a duty to help our neighbor and to do the right thing. And when we do that and get educated, then we'll be much more successful. But with that, I'm 5 minutes over, and I apologize if we're unable to get to everyone else. We've got about still 7 or 8 people. Try to get into the queue early, and we'll try to shorten our time we're spending with people if we have a lot of people in the queue. So, but with that, we're going to end things. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Appreciate it. Lord willing, we will see you next Monday. Good night, everybody.